Good evening. Let me just begin by saying how much I appreciated Evan and his ability to pick out some songs. He came to me last night and said, what's your sermon going to be about? I said, well, principles of the path. And he said, well, I'm going to try to find some songs. You got any suggestions? I said, I have no idea. Nothing comes to mind. I think he did pretty good. What do you think? That certainly fits very well into our study tonight, and I appreciate him very much for the effort he put into the song service. If you would, please grab the book and turn to the book of Proverbs. When we were setting up this series of lessons, I asked Brother Byers if you had a lot of young people. He said, well, you have a few. And I said, well, I've got a lesson that I'd really like to present to your young people. But the more I thought about it, this is a lesson that isn't just for young people. Now, granted, the younger we learn the principles that we're going to see in the book of Proverbs tonight, the better our life will be. But regardless of where we are in our journey, if we can learn these principles, we will not only have a life that you might say is a little easier, for the way of the transgressor is hard, but we'll have a life that is much more fruitful. I can remember being in school, and it seemed like every year they would bring in a motivational speaker to come speak to us at our high school. And invariably, every single one of them had the exact same story. Well, when I was your age, I got off into drugs, and I got into this, and all these bad things happened, and you see this huge, huge catastrophe presented before you. And then all of a sudden, the light came on, and I was able to pick myself up out of the mire, and here I am today. Well, I couldn't help but think, wouldn't it be great if one of these days somebody got up there and said, hey, guess what? I wasn't dumb enough to do that in the first place. Now, that's the kind of person I'd like to listen to be honest with you. Now, don't misunderstand the point. There's a lot you can learn from those who have made mistakes. And certainly we all can identify with that. And every single one of us can share a good message from the standpoint of maybe here's what not to do. And here's what I learned from going down this path. But when we look at God's Word, God's Word, while it is a way in which we can be taken from the wrong path and presented back on the path that leads to heaven, God's Word is also a Word that keeps us on the straight and narrow, if you will. And tonight, I would like to look at it from that point of view. Growing up in West Texas, we had a unique school situation in our town. Busing was pretty common. And so in an effort to avoid busing and my brother and sister and I being shipped off to all these different schools, my dad would just take us to school. But yet we all went to three different schools, so the trip to school every morning kind of took a while. And typically when we got in the car, we were like most kids. We got in there in half a coma. Our eyes rolled back in our heads, and my dad loved to sing in the car, especially when he caught you asleep. Well, one day in particular, I could tell Dad wasn't necessarily in the singing mood because he was kind of out of it himself. Now, we were asleep, but you could tell he was focused. And as he drove us to school that day, he drove right past the turn that went to my sister's school. And none of us kids said a thing. When he went past my brother's school, we all knew what was happening. Dad's forgotten we're in the car. And still, no one said a thing. He drove all the way up to his business. And he pulled the car right up there up front. He turned off the car, reached down, got his briefcase, got out of the car, and turned around to shut the door, and there were all three of his kids looking there with big smiles. Now, that's where I need to end the story, because after that, it wasn't exactly pretty. But you know this very important principle. Direction, not intention, lead you where you want to go. It is your direction, not your intentions, that lead you to your destination. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, well, that's deep. He must have studied real hard to figure that out. But here's my point. Every single one of us have great intentions. When was the last time you ever talked with somebody who just made some enormous error and they went, you know, I really intended to make this big error in the first place? No, that's not what they said. They said, my intentions were good. I ended up here, but I promise you this is where I wanted to go. I know that unfortunately this is what happened, but this was never my intention. That is very important for us to see, because I believe full well we all know that principle. Any of us could grab a map and look at a map and say, this road is the road that I need to go from here to here. And we can see that principle so clearly on a map. But yet, when it comes to our lives, when it comes to how I live my life, when it comes to the friends that I choose, when it comes to the job that I seek, when it comes to the way in which I live my life, even from a spiritual point of view, we have this huge disconnect. And it's as if we've forgotten the most basic principle there is. In Proverbs chapter 7, we find a wise man sitting up in his house. And it just so happens that from his view, he sees a youth headed down the wrong path. And I want you to grasp and understand something that's very important from the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is a book that is written by a father to his son. If you go back to chapter 2, you can find that the father is pleading with his son to listen to him. He is pleading with him to seek wisdom. He says, my son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands, and that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, if you cry out for discernment and lift your voice for understanding, if you will seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Can you hear this imploring? If you're a parent, you understand that very well. For the day comes, unfortunately, when you have to let them go and they finally have to really make decisions on their own. I'm not there yet. I don't even really want to think about it yet. But that's what this father's doing. And so in chapter 7, he's going to tell his son what happened. What he saw one day, if you will. I'm going to begin in verse 6. For at the window of my house, I looked through the lattice, and I saw among the simple, and I perceived among the youths, a young man devoid of understanding, passing along the street near her corner, and he took the path to her house, in the twilight of the evening, in the black, in the dark night. Now I know every single one of you know exactly what's going on here, don't you? This is a train wreck. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a biblical scholar to see this is a train wreck. And no one can stop it. Notice the words he uses. He says, I looked out. It's as if he is up in this room and there's this young man outside the length of his voice, outside the reach of his arm, and he can see it. And here's what he sees. He sees a man who is simple. Now, understand that generally, the concept of being simple isn't really all that bad. In fact, if you go over to Psalms chapter 19, we find that wisdom is for those who are simple. And God's Word will provide wisdom for the simple-minded. That is not a cut-down. That is not to demean anyone. But yet when you look at it here, it is the idea that here is one who is naive and just lacks discernment. He's young. There is nothing wrong with being young. What it does imply is that there is a very good chance that due to your lack of age, there is not a lot of wisdom there. Now, don't misunderstand the point. Just because somebody may be older doesn't mean that they got wisdom. But yet the young are probably not going to have as much simply because they haven't experienced it or seen it. But then notice the big word here, path. Verse 8, he took the path to her house. Verse 10, and there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an imprudent face she said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you, diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. Now there's no doubt, there is no doubt what this woman is all about. Typically, most of us men will play kind of a little dumb sometimes when we see a woman that may be dressed just a little bit in modest, this, that, and the other, and our wife goes, oh, can you believe that? And you go, what? Oh, women can see it. And we really can too. And I know that you can see it in these verses. This woman is up to no good, but I want you to listen to what she says to this young man who has taken the path to her house. First of all, she says, I have made my peace offerings. You know what she's saying? I'm a religious person. Yeah! I'm religious just like you. I've just come back from the temple. I have paid my vows. I have made my sacrifice to God. And I have taken this big bucket of sin and I went up there and I emptied it out. And look, the bucket is empty. It's time to fill it up again. And notice, she has the evidence that she's been to church, if you will. For she's bringing it back with her. I have my peace offerings with me. Often when a sacrifice was made at the temple, there were some sacrifices in which the sacrifice itself was not totally consumed by the fire. And often the priest would get some of that, but sometimes the person who made the sacrifice would be able to carry it at home as well. And that's what she has. The evidence that she is real. Oh, well, hey. She's religious. She believes in God. She serves God and she goes to church. Oh. And then it gets better. Notice what she says in verse 15. Remember, this is a young guy. This is a young guy. She goes, I came out to meet you. Ho, 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 ho. I'm here for you. I'm diligently seeking your... No, this guy, me. Oh, she's here for me. Oh, this has to be right. She's here for me. And the preacher up in the room is going, No. No, she says that to all the guys. Oh, no, she doesn't. No, she really came for me. No, I've seen this before. They all say that. No, you don't understand. Our situation is different. No, you don't understand. I'm not falling prey like everybody else. She's really here for me. I have found you. I'm the one. Now, here's what the young man is probably thinking. I know she's probably not the good girl to take home to mom, but I'll be the one to change her. Because she sought me. There's a kind of fad going around in Hollywood right now. The older women with the younger guys, you know. Have y'all ever noticed that in the news? Kind of a trophy thing. And it's not just about the older woman feeling like she's got the trophy. Most of the guys go, hey. Because this person elevates my status. Because everybody knows her. Hear this young guy? His heart's beating fast now. Oh, he's all excited. Notice verse 16. She says, I have spread my bed with tapestry and colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us delight ourselves in love. Oh. This isn't just a one-time deal. No, no, no. No, this is love, says the young man. The preacher up there is going, no, 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 no. This isn't a one-time event. This isn't just a one-time deal. Your situation is unique. The young man would say, no, it is. It really is. For she loves me, and I love her. And what do we typically say when somebody tries to interfere with our love or interfere with something that we really want to do? Don't you want me to be happy? Don't you want me to be happy? Because this is love. I can see, and I think you can too, that you can't reason with this guy. Because there's a soundtrack going on in his mind that is so loud, he can't hear anything else but the music. It's probably a sound like what you heard in my day growing up, a little Cool in the Gang. Celebration tonight. If you're one of the younger guys, it's Party Like a Rock Star. For you older folks, it's Buddy Holly. Oh boy. And it's so loud that nothing else can get in. But the preacher hears another soundtrack that is very loud in his mind. You know what it is? The Jaws theme. Yeah. And somebody's about to die. Somebody's about to be chewed up and spit out. And you can't jump through the television to save them. Notice the next verse. This is amazing. What started as simply taking the path to her house, now look where it's headed. Look where it's headed. She's not a harlot, for she has Egyptian linen. She has wealth. And she's not a harlot because look at this. Verse 19. For my husband is not at home. My husband is not. I hope not. Well, yeah. I would hate to think he was. But he still goes. My husband is not at home. In fact, he's gone on a long journey. And I know he's going to be gone a long time because he's taken a big bag of money with him. And he will come home at the appointed time. Do you hear what she is saying to him? We have no consequences. This is not one of those situations in which you're going to get caught. This is not going to be a snare. We're going to be able to get away with it. We are different. Our situation is different. Nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to get hurt. Can you hear what's going on? And the young man's going, yeah. Yeah. In fact, he's going to be gone for a long time. Hang around a little longer. Can you imagine? No consequences? Is that real? But then, notice verse 21. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. Now, let me just make a quick point. When you go back to the beginning of this story and you look at verse 8, this young, simple man, it doesn't say that this is where he wanted to end up. He just wanted to take the path to her house. I've heard some exciting things go on at this place. I'm just checking it out. I mean, is there anything wrong with checking it out? Think about it. There's no sin that says you can't go over here, is there? Thou shalt not walk over here? No. No, but it's a path. It's a path. And with her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately, he went after her. As an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till an arrow struck his liver. As a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would cost him his life. What? That wasn't my intention. Oh, I didn't expect this to happen. No, this was a path, says the preacher. And the path never changes. Listen to the words that he uses here. An ox to the slaughter. That's not exactly a pretty picture. It's a slaughterhouse. Anybody here ever been to a slaughterhouse? Nasty. Can almost make you go vegetarian. An arrow to the liver. The liver is a vital organ. My dad actually had a liver transplant a couple of years ago. I actually studied up on the liver. That thing's huge. Do you realize how big your liver is? It's massive. I typically thought of liver and onions. It can't be that valuable. But you get the liver. You destroy the liver. It's over. It's a fatal blow. The hunter goes for the organs that prove to be the fatal blow. This is a fatal wound. It's like a bird in the snare, he says. A bird in the snare, captured and eaten. For that's why the snare was set. Now, can you see this? You kind of knew where this was going when we started, didn't you? Maybe it wasn't supposed to be this bad. But it's a path, isn't it? And the path never changes. And the path principle, let me make this clear. The path principle doesn't just apply to sexual immorality. It's not just about adultery. The path principle applies to almost every facet of your life. In Proverbs 4 and in verse 26, the proverb reads, "Ponder the path of your feet. Let all your ways be established." Proverbs 14 and in verse 12, "There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death." The young man did not go out onto that path with the anticipation, "Hey, by the end of this night, I'll be dead." But the preacher said, "That's the only place that path leads." Notice, if you would, go back to our text, and I want you to listen to the way he concludes this. This is so very important for us to grasp. Verse 24, "Now therefore, listen to me." Can you hear the Father to the Son? Listen to me. Listen to me. Listen. How many times have you yelled at your kids to listen? Listen. And you know they're looking at you, but for some reason you feel compelled to yell. You just want to make sure that they get it. Listen to me. Listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Oh, that was the big problem. His heart went first. Isn't that what the Lord tells us? For out of the heart come the things that defile the man. It's not necessarily those words that are out there or those actions. It all started in the heart. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways, and do not stray into her paths. Don't even get near the path. Don't even go close to the path, for this path always ends in doom. Notice verse 26. Circle this. Circle this. "For she has cast down many wounded, And all who were slain by her were strong men. You ever thought about that? It's generally not the weak that get captured. Especially those who realize they're weak. They realize they're vulnerable. They realize that they're easily enticed. Therefore, they don't go near there in the first place. Anybody here ever had to work with somebody who was an alcoholic? I have. Somebody who's been on drugs? I've worked with them. And when I'm around them, even the things that I may choose to do that are as harmless as can be, I don't even want to get them near them. I had a very dear friend who was on Loratab, painkiller. And when he came by my office one day, I had a terrible headache, and I don't even want to get the Excedrin out. Harmless, but not for him. Because it's led down a very horrible path for him. He's off of it now, but the only reason he's still off of it is he realizes his weakness. And so he doesn't go anywhere near it. The same goes for the alcoholic. You don't even get in the presence of it. You don't even get where you can smell it. You don't even get where you can see it. Notice what he is telling us. She captures the strong man. What do we always say? Oh, it won't happen to me. No. You don't understand. I've gone to church my whole life. Yeah. I know the Bible. I know all 2066 books. I can say all the books of the New Testament. I know all the Proverbs. I know the steps of salvation. I know that by grace you were saved through faith. I even memorized a lot of verses. It's not going to happen to me. Because I can put on the brakes. No. She takes down the strong because they're foolish. And she's done it many, many times. Notice verse 27. Her house is the way to hell. Now, just so we get the picture, it's one thing to die. It's another thing to go to hell. And her house is on a pathway to hell, descending to the chambers of death. Now, we see that, don't we? We see that. And I would say there's probably a 99% chance none of us here tonight, Lord willing, are going to have the urge when we leave here tonight to go down to whatever street it may be in Nashville. There's always a street somewhere in some city that's like this. But may I suggest to you that the principle of this path carries over into many other areas of our life. I've got a list here, and please understand that this is a list that's just from your preacher. All right? One good thing about preaching, you always have good material because all you got to do is look in the mirror. I'll give you a list. 12 things here where we have a little disconnect. Where we have great intentions, but the path we choose is just not going to get us there. See if you can identify this with me. I plan to be the strong spiritual leader of my home. So I'll work at the office as much as I can. I want to be thin and healthy. I want to be able to play with my grandchildren as their granddad. My goal is to still coach their soccer teams, even as a 70-year-old man. So what do I say at least 3 times a week as I go through the drive-thru window? Supersize that, will you? You hear the disconnect? I plan to be financially stable. So what do I say throughout the week? Charge it. Oh, credit. Charge it. I want to be a charitable giver. I want to be one who not only contributes faithfully to the Lord's work at the local congregation, but I want to be one who's willing to always give to missionaries individually and to share with others. So what do? I constantly buy myself a new car and I get all the latest electronics at my house and I eat out every chance I can. I want my children to love the Lord. So I'll make sure that they never miss one of their sporting events because of church. And they never miss out on all the other things that their kids get to, the other kids get to do at school, because I don't want them to be left out. I want to have a great marriage. Not just a regular marriage, I want a great marriage. So I'll put my kids before my spouse. I want to be a submissive person who is humble and always working with others. So I'll disregard the advice from any older Christians and I'll refuse to seek wisdom from those who have already treaded the pathway. Because see, their day and age was different from mine. And they don't know what it's like to raise a kid today. I want to be a leader in the Lord's church. So I'll let work and recreational activities dominate all my weekends. I want my home to be a place of hospitality. So I'll keep myself so busy that I'm always too tired to open it up to others. For that's my excuse. I'm just too tired. I want to be a great personal worker. That's what I want. I want to be one who saves souls. Well, every person that I seem to run into has all these problems and there's so many excuses as to why they're really not a good prospect for the Lord's church anyhow. I want to be a servant of the Lord. So I'll keep myself so busy chasing worldly pursuits, I never have time for prayer or personal study. See the point? And that's just a few things. But we have a great disconnect. Now, I don't want this to all be negative. I want to share with you some folks that I met a couple of years ago. Their names are Alfred and Rhonda Marcus. And that's their little son there, Quentin. There's a church that recently started up in the Chillicothe, Ohio area. I'm not sure if you know where Chillicothe is. It's about an hour south of Columbus. And it's a blue-collar town. Right in the very center of this town is this wonderful paper mill. Place smells great when you visit there. But there wasn't a local church there. In fact, the nearest church was probably 30 to 45 minutes away. And so two young preachers decided they were going to move there together and they started work. And they called us down in Hueytown. We helped support both of them. And so they decided they were going to pick up their families. They had their support and they were going to move to Chillicothe. But before they moved, they contacted their friends, Alfred and Rhonda. Alfred's not a preacher of the gospel. But Dan and Mark said, Alfred, you and Rhonda have got to move down there with us. We need you. You'll be such a great asset. Come on and move down there with us. Alfred goes, well, I don't have a job. I've got a job here. I want to have a job there. Please move. You'll find one. We know you'll find one. Trust God and move. Now, here's what's going through my mind. These guys both have outside support. But Alfred went, okay. And he and Rhonda moved. He found a job in Columbus, so he commutes to Columbus 4 days a week. And the church in Chillicothe has gone from three families to their last weekend gospel meeting. They had over 80 people there, and they're building a building at this time. And who's the instrumental foundation of the work? You're looking at him. Can I share something else with you? Not only was it a financial step of faith, Have you noticed anything about Alfred and Rhonda? Alfred personally hates Chillicothe. Let's just say that the community isn't exactly African-American friendly. But that church is going to change that. And it only takes one. And there you're looking at them. And they're baptizing, they're restoring, they're teaching, and they're growing. But isn't that the principle of the path that the Lord gave us? Take up your cross and follow me. Deny yourself and come follow me. Last summer, my grandmother, my Mama Faye, passed away. It was the easiest and the hardest funeral I've ever had to preach in my life. Easy to get material. But my Mama Faye was special. I thought I knew her pretty well. 90 years old. I was the oldest. Enough said if you're the oldest kid. But I found out something about her as I sat down with my mother and my other aunts and uncles. You see, Mama Faye and Papa John lived on the same dirt road in rural West Texas, surrounded by cotton fields, for 68 years. And I often wondered why they didn't move out of this real small house. I mean, I knew Papa John had the money. He was very successful as a grower. He had had cotton crops. In fact, I knew full well that many, many, many people, not only in the congregation, but many people in the community came and borrowed money from my Papa John. Lots of money. People that had much larger houses than Mama Faye and Papa John. And I often wonder why they never moved. Why they never built something nicer. Why they never seek to, you know, get up out of the cotton field and move off. And I found out something when I sat down with my mom and my aunts and uncles. And it was this. It was a little saying that Mama Faye and Papa John lived by. And this is it. A man with excess money is like a drowning man filling his pockets with rocks. A man with excess money is like a drowning man filling his pockets with rocks. And it hit me. You know what the biggest problem we have in our society today is? Not really that we don't have enough. We're in a society that has too much, don't we? And we don't know how to handle it. Because we're on the wrong path. In that small little farmhouse, no matter how small it was the place for Sunday afternoon dinner for all the visitors who visited Auburn Street. I actually inherited Mama Faye's dining room table. We got it to our house, and the first night we sat down and ate it, I went, I don't think I've ever eaten at this table. Because the kids were always in the kitchen. Mama Faye always packed it with adults. People I didn't even know. But do you see the point? Let me leave you four things here real quick. Four things. I know you know these. But please make sure that you really know these things. Direction, not intention, determines destination. Twice in the book of Proverbs, we find this. There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. Proverbs 14:12 as well as Proverbs 16:25. Intention means nothing. But direction does. And understand this. The path never changes. Oh, you may think that for some reason you've got the strength that you can pick up this path. You can be the one who changes it. And you can move it over here and make it go a place where it's never gone before. But the fact of the matter is you can't. You can't. And you may think that it won't happen to me. It will. Oh, it will. For the path never changes. Proverbs 13, verse 15. Good understanding gains favor, but the way of the unfaithful is hard. It's always hard. Proverbs 1, verse 19. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners. Every time. Isaiah chapter 53 and in verse 6. Let's all be mindful of this. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. And in the words of Dr. Phil, how's that working for you? I tell you, some of the worst advice you can ever follow is your own. And that's typically what we do. That's typically what we do. I sat down with a couple not too long ago. I was having some marital problems, and it was big financial issues. And they said, you know, we're just going to file bankruptcy and just get this all over. I said, whoa, time out. Wait. Well, why are you doing that? Well, we just don't get along. Whoa, time out. I said, have y'all ever been to a financial advisor? I don't necessarily consider myself a financial guru. So have you ever been to a financial advisor? They said, no. So here's what I want you to do. I gave them a name and phone number. I want you to go visit this guy. He is a faithful Christian. He will give you some sound advice. You go listen to him and he'll help you. A few weeks later, we got together again. I said, okay. All right. Before we get into our study here, tell me, how did it go with a financial advisor? And they said, he doesn't understand. I said, what do you mean? Well, he doesn't understand. He told us to do this, that, and the other. I said, well, that sounds pretty good to me. He goes, no. I think we're going to be doing this. And I said, what? Do you not realize that it was your own advice that got you where you are now, and now you're going to follow it again? Does that make any sense? But that's what we did. You know what some of the hardest words for us to say? You mind helping me? I need a little help here. Would you mind giving me a little... When was the last time you walked... This is a tough one. Husbands, when's the last time you went to your wife and said, am I being a good husband? Could you give me your point of view? Or am I being a good wife? Well, I just don't care what you have to say. You just understand. You see, it's our blinders that gets us in trouble. And the path never changes. But we can change paths. Ponder the path of your feet. Let all your ways be established. Psalms 27:11. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me in a smooth path. Proverbs 14, verse 8. The wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way. Proverbs 23:19. Hear, my son, and be wise, and guard your heart in the way. One of the greatest blessings we have is we can change paths. But it's up to us to do it. And if we really want to be honest with ourselves, we all struggle with this. And I want you to grasp this one. Jesus said, the path to heaven is narrow. In the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapter 7, he says, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it, because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way that leads to life, and there are few who find it. May I read one more verse? Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. Because you know what they want to do? Get you off the path. And to the naive, to the simple, to those who don't consider their ways, they're easy game. And to those who think it'll never happen to him, to them, they're already doomed. One more verse. In John chapter 14 and in verse 6, Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. I don't know what path you are on tonight. You've got to determine that. I would encourage you, even if you are confident that you are on the right path, that you seek wisdom. You have some fine elders here and elders' wives. Talk to them. Ask what they see in your life. You have those who are older than you who have been down the path before. Ask them what they see. I just turned 40 not too long ago, and I just figured out how to live in the 30s. And I just figured out how to rear children before the age of 10. Now they're becoming teenagers. And I know nothing. And I need help. But more importantly, all of us need help to follow the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, and to stay on His path. For His is the only path that will lead to the Father. Tonight, if you need to get back on the narrow path, you have the opportunity to repent and have your sins washed away in the blood of Christ. Get back tonight. Cast aside the pride. Come back to Him. If at one time you were on the right path and now you're off of it, humble yourself. Humble yourself and come back to Him. He's waiting. Get on the right path tonight. If you will, please come while we stand and sing.